The most important thing that you can do for your body is to replenish it daily with nutrients that naturally diminish the aging process, daily stress, and other various problems. The NutraHealth Company provides its customers with the most efficient and effective quality nutrition and wellness products at the lowest possible prices anywhere. We're talking ROAX, Premier Research Labs, Vitalogix, and Jigsaw Health. So what are you waiting for? Go to NutraHealth's website now at www.nutri.cc and order any of their state-of-the-art supplements. And again, the lowest prices anywhere. That's www.nutri.cc. If you're the type of person who is very serious about what types of foods that you put into your body, then you should be just as serious about what types of lotions or creams that you put on your skin. Listen, everybody has lotion, but the Hydramay company has skin nutrition. Hydramay Skin Nutrition is a revolutionary antioxidant, anti-aging product that does not contain occlusive ingredients like glycerin, silicone, dimethicone, or other petrochemicals that block the skin's respiratory functions. Take it from someone who uses their hands for a living. Hydramay Skin Nutrition will make your skin feel fresh and clean with a beautiful fresh aroma that, by the way, has no scent added. So next time you're at the store and you're looking for a lotion for your skin, make sure you head to the section of the store that has the product called Hydramay Skin Nutrition. Hydramay is available at these fine stores: Healthy Heart, Healthy Pleasure in Alliance, The Raisin Rack in Canton, Krieger's Health Food Market in Cuyahoga Falls, Cindy's Health and Vitality Center in Niles, Vital Choice, North Royalton, Mustard Seed Market and Cafe, Akron and Solon, Ritzman Natural Pharmacies, all 8 locations, Weber's Health Foods, and Hobart Health Food Stores. Or go to their website, www.hydramay.com. That's HYDRAME.com. Hydramay, bringing nutrition to moisturization. You are listening to the Dennis Lewin Radio Program on BBS Internet Radio. For all information about the artists who performed on this portrait, send me an email from my website and I shall give you that information, which is www.dennislewinmusic.com. Turning you on to classical music. In the American Heritage Dictionary, there are around 5 definitions for the word romantic. Most of the definitions pertain to love and romance, but the fourth definition does not. It only reads imaginative but impractical. I think that this definition is the crux of being a true romantic, such as myself. Because romantic passion cannot thrive on practicality. Because basically, it is a passionate vision and a way of life. And although it is a tough road sometimes, it does have its moments of glory, as when you touch someone who cannot express themselves through art, poetry, or music. I feel that this fourth definition was definitely the case for the French composer Hector Berlioz. Many experts agree that the three most important icons of the French Romantic movement included poet Victor Hugo, artist Eugène Delacroix, and composer Hector Berlioz. This inborn romanticism can be traced back to Berlioz's childhood and exemplified when he would weep while reading the poems of the Roman poet Virgil and become overwhelmed by the architecture and presence of a seriously decked-out Catholic church. Here a fascinating scenario is given in the Milton Cross New Encyclopedia of the Great Composers that supports this Berlioz romantic weakness. At the age of 18, Hector Berlioz fell in love with a girl who was 6 years younger than himself. And although the relationship fizzled out, he remained in love with this person till the end of his life. Even after several relationships and two traumatic marriages, 40-some years later, Hector Berlioz showed up on the doorstep of his first love, Estelle Fournier, and he told her that she was his only true love ever. At the time, she was 65 years old, white-haired, and the mother of four adult children. This last scenario would definitely fall under definition 4, imaginative but impractical. Louis Hector Berlioz was born on December the 11th, 1803, in La Côte-Saint-André, France. He had 5 siblings, but 3 of them died before they reached adulthood. Fortunately for Hector, his 2 sisters who did survive, named Nancy and Adelaide, remained very close to him for most of his life. His father was a liberal, atheist, small-town, prosperous physician who had every intention on deterring his young son from a musical career. In his eyes, Hector would follow in his footsteps and become a doctor. On the other hand, his mother was a very strict, devout Catholic, and although she religiously and politically differed from her husband's many views on life, she definitely agreed with this musical deterrence. This was because she believed that any type of entertainment venue was the gateway to hell. But with all of this deterrence, fortunately for us, neither of the two would be able to stop fate. It was actually in the church during his first communion that Hector Berlioz was drawn to music, and during more of these visits to the church, he became mesmerized by the sounds and melodies of the Eucharist hymns sung by the church choir. As he later stated, quote, "A new world of love and feeling unfolded." It was also at this time that Berlioz found an old flute-like instrument called a flageolet in his house, and after finding the instrument, he taught himself to play very nicely. As far as his beginning lessons are concerned, Hector Berlioz started late at the age of 12, when he began limited piano and guitar lessons from several local teachers. Hector Berlioz was not considered a child prodigy, but he was extremely ambitious, and he would stay up many nights secretly reading textbooks on harmony, theory, and counterpoint, desperately trying to teach himself musical knowledge, and desperately trying to keep his musical career surreptitious because of his parents' mandate. 4 years later, at the age of 16, Hector Berlioz sent some of his works to a publisher, but unfortunately, these compositions were denied, and in a bout of total frustration, He tore up the manuscripts and he threw them away. When Hector Berlioz was 18 years old, he fell madly in love with Estelle Fournier, who he called his first true love, who, by the way, was 12 years old. In his memoirs, he does not state how many times that they were together, but after the relationship was over, Estelle married a very rich lawyer and she had 6 children. Meanwhile, his father was still determined to make his son a doctor. And even though the young Berlioz fought his father's commands, he unwillingly went to Paris in the year 1821 and studied medicine. But after he was called to dissect a dead animal in one of his classes, Hector Berlioz became so violently sick, he ran from the school and he locked himself in his room. But even this was not enough to keep his father off of his back. So reluctantly, he continued his medical studies, and he received his bachelor's degree in science in the year 1824. All during his 3-year stay at the medical school, Hector Berlioz did not abandon his music, and he continued to strive at becoming a better composer. He was a regular at the Paris Opera House, and he studied many scores in the conservatory library, including the works of one of his musical idols, Christoph Gluck. It was also at this time that Hector Berlioz experienced his first Beethoven symphony performance, and after this Beethoven consecration, as so many young composers before him, Hector Berlioz was hit over the head with his future, which would be on the concert stage conducting his own works. But Berlioz was realistic, and he knew that he had a lot more to learn before achieving this goal. So, for more education in the field of composition, Hector Berlioz went to Jean-Francis Lesueur, Napoleon Bonaparte's court composer, who was also a professor at the Royal Chapel and at the Paris Conservatory. Under Lesueur's supervision, Berlioz wrote his first opera called Estelle et Nomeron, and after the work was completed, Lesueur put Berlioz at ease by telling him, quote, "You will never be a doctor or a druggist. You will be a great composer, for you have a genius." His next work was a mass for the St. Roch Church, and it was performed on December the 28th of 1823. Unfortunately, this work would be a complete failure. It was also at this time that Hector Berlioz attempted to be enrolled at the Paris Conservatory, but sadly, he was denied and practically thrown out of the institution by Luigi Cherubini, who was the conservatory's director at the time. Not long after this, in the year 1824, Hector Berlioz traveled back home to announce that his career in medicine was over, and that he wanted to put all of his efforts into his music. And although his parents were less than thrilled with this decision, his father began to weaken, and he agreed to continue his son's money allowance only if Berlioz could prove his musical abilities in a short period of time. Soon after this, in the year 1826, Berlioz was accepted at the Paris Conservatory. During his studies, he brought in extra income by teaching guitar lessons and by singing in the theater chorus. And 2 years later, to prove to his parents that he had musically grown, Hector Berlioz staged his mass of 1823 for a second time, and it was performed on July the 10th of 1825, with money borrowed from a friend. This time the mass was received a little bit better than the first performance, but now Berlioz was left with a huge debt to pay back, and after finding out about the money that his son now owed, and that Hector Berlioz lost the Prix de Rome composition prize twice at the Paris Conservatory, his father became enraged and he cut off his son's allowance completely. It was also at this time that Hector Berlioz would enter into one of his 2 stormy relationships in his life. In the fall of the year 1827, an English Shakespearean company came to Paris to put on a series of performances. The role of Ophelia in the play Hamlet was being performed by a very beautiful and sexy Irish girl by the name of Harriet Constance Smithson. And while attending one of the performances, Hector Berlioz took one look at Harriet, and he fell madly in love with her. After the performance, he left the theater in a mad state of love, and for quite a while, Berlioz tried desperately to contact Smithson, but unfortunately, he had no success. For 5 years after that, Hector Berlioz basically stalked the girl, and he sent her many love letters. At first, the letters terrified her, and they went unanswered. But Berlioz was not easily deterred, and he tried every trick in the book to draw her attention. He even wrote a number of Irish songs to works by poet Thomas Moore in her honor, and he also arranged a special concert for Harriet on May the 26th of 1828 at the Paris Conservatory that included these Irish tunes just to impress her. But unfortunately for Hector Berlioz, Harriet Smithson never even knew that the concert took place. After this, so blinded by his infatuation for her, Berlioz rented a room next to her at a hotel that she was staying at in Paris. But after paying for the room, Berlioz found out that Harriet Smithson would be leaving Paris immediately, and after she left, he was crushed. So to make himself feel better, he entered a relationship with a woman by the name of Camille Moke, who was supposedly a brilliant concert pianist. The two fell somewhat in love and eventually became engaged for marriage. But even this could not stop his overwhelming desire for Harriet Smithson. During this period, Hector Berlioz wrote two very important works. The first was 8 Scenes from Faust, written in the year 1829. This work was the basis for his famous composition called The Damnation of Faust. The second work would be the composition that Hector Berlioz would become the most famous for. This work would be called Symphonie Fantastique. Symphonie Fantastique was debuted on December the 5th, 1830, and Berlioz knew that Harriet Smithson was back in Paris. So, he set the premiere up so it would attract the attention of his beloved Harriet. Unfortunately, Berlioz found out later that Harriet Smithson was still unfamiliar with his name and his career. Here he is quoted. "Would the tidings of my success reach Miss Smithson in the intoxicating whirlwinds of her own triumphs? Alas, I learned afterward that absorbed in her own brilliant career, she had never even heard of my name, my struggles, my concert, or my success. But even though Smithson never showed up for the premiere, the concert was a huge triumph. At the performance, the great piano virtuoso Franz Liszt was in the audience, and after it was over, Liszt became one of Berlioz's biggest admirers. But even with all of the success, Berlioz considered the concert a major failure, because his darling Harriet was not in the hall that evening." The Symphonie Fantastique is based on a clearly autobiographical program that Berlioz later denied as being the case, but it still remains important to understand the music. The story of the symphony is about a young romantic who is frustrated with love and who tries to kill himself by taking opium. Instead of dying, the young man begins to hallucinate, where five different movements of the symphony constitute five different hallucinations. The first movement sets the scene when he first sees his beloved, and he falls madly in love with her. In the second movement, he sees her dancing at a grand ball, and the third movement of the work paints a picture of him being calmed by two shepherds as the music sonically projects the beauty of the fields. In the fourth movement, he murders the girl, and he is executed at the guillotine. And finally, the fifth movement is when his corpse becomes the centerpiece of a witch's Black Sabbath, surrounded by ghosts and goblins. During the witch's Sabbath, the young musician's beloved appears as a grotesque hag, and she joins in the evil orgy as the bells ring out Dies Irae. It is speculated that Hector Berlioz actually did experience this dream and wrote the music to Symphonie Fantastique while under the influence of opium, but this can only be speculated. The most important thing that you can do for your body is to replenish it daily with nutrients that naturally diminish the aging process, daily stress, and other various problems. The NutraHealth Company provides its customers with the most efficient and effective quality nutrition and wellness products at the lowest possible prices anywhere. We're talking ROAX, Premier Research Labs, Vitalogix, and Jigsaw Health. So what are you waiting for? Go to NutraHealth's website now at www.nutri.cc and order any of their state-of-the-art supplements. And again, the lowest prices anywhere. That's www.nutri.cc. You are listening to the Dennis Lewin Radio Program on BBS Internet Radio. For all information about the artists who performed on this portrait, send me an email from my website and I shall give you that information, which is www.DennisLewinMusic.com, turning you on to classical music. After Symphony Fantastique, finally, Hector Berlioz won the Prix de Rome Composition Prize for a cantata called Sardin Appelé. It was performed in October of 1830, and the work was so badly performed by the musicians in the orchestra, in a fit of rage, Hector Berlioz threw the score at the orchestra, and he walked out. After this, Berlioz traveled to the Villa Medici in Rome for 3 years. That is a mandated prescription by the Prix de Rome. Berlioz hated Italy, and he did not like the rules that were set up for the young musicians. He also disliked Italian food, and most of all, he really disliked Italian music. And to make matters even worse, during all of this, terrible rumors began to fly about his fiancée, concert pianist Camille Moak. It was said that she was cheating on Berlioz and having a relationship with another man. And after hearing this news, Berlioz went into a jealous state of rage and he left Italy for Paris. He actually disguised himself as a lady's maid so he would not be recognized after killing his fiance and her lover. But soon he realized that he had taken his actions a bit too far and that it was not worth the act. After a brief period, Berlioz returned to the Villa Medici, and in the year 1832, he returned to Paris. He never did complete his 3-year residency at the Villa Medici, but to his delight, he found out that Harriet Smithson was back in Paris. And since his love for her never did stop, he arranged another performance for his Symphonie Fantastique, hoping that maybe she would come to the performance. And to his astonishment, Harriet Smithson and her sister showed for the performance. At this performance, Hector Berlioz did not conduct the orchestra. As far as his job that evening, the record states that Berlioz was positioned by the timpani in the drum section of the orchestra. This is when he saw Smithson enter her box in front of the stage. She was the focus of the whole room, and while gazing towards the orchestra, she recognized Berlioz, and after seeing him, she said to her sister, quote, "Poor young man, no doubt he has forgotten me, and I hope that he has." But after Harriet Smithson heard Symphonie Fantastique that evening, she began to change her tune and have a new outlook on Hector Berlioz. The piece seemed to really touch her deeply, or probably it was because her popularity as an actress was fading fast, or because her financial reserves were disastrous. For whatever the reason, after the fantastic performance, it was now no longer difficult for Berlioz to be near his beloved Harriet. Soon, the two began to see each other frequently, and after a while, their relationship began to turn into a very volatile storm. Berlioz became so madly involved with her, he actually tried to commit suicide in front of Smithson once, just to prove his love for her. But, with all of the tension, fighting, and insanity, unbelievably, on October the 3rd, 1833, the two were married at the British Embassy. This marriage, of course, would be a major disaster. It states that some of the reasons for their woes were due to the fact that the two were too much alike, and that Harriet Smithson also suffered from the gnawing realities of her fading thespian star status. She would also become extremely jealous of anyone and everything around her if the attention was not directed at her. Along with these types of problems, they were also very poor, and after a while, the two grew apart, mentally and physically. To seek comfort, Hector Berlioz turned to another woman who was a singer by the name of Marie Rico. But oddly, with all of his marriage pains, Hector Berlioz still loved his wife, Harriet. And this was still the case at the end of Harriet Smithson's life, when sadly, she became an invalid. Harriet Smithson Berlioz died on March the 3rd, 1853. Berlioz took care of her until the last day of her life. the same performance of Symphony Fantastique that brought Hector Berlioz and Harriet Smithson together also brought Berlioz a serious benefactor. At the end of that performance, a very tall, lanky gentleman with piercing eyes came backstage to congratulate Berlioz on the performance. This tall, mysterious man was the great virtuoso violinist Niccolo Paganini. Paganini had recently bought a very fine viola, and he asked Berlioz if he would write something specifically for him and the instrument. Unfortunately, what Berlioz wrote for Paganini was not exactly what Paganini had in mind. As the great violinist stated, it was not music for a virtuoso. This work, called Harold in Italy, was like a symphony with viola obbligato of deep poetic content. And after looking over the first pages of the piece, Paganini lost all interest in the composition. But the work would still be performed on November the 23rd of 1834 in Paris, without Paganini's involvement or presence. But ironically, 4 years later, on December the 16th of 1838, Mr. Paganini would hear the work that was originally written for him for the first time, and luckily for Berlioz, he changed his tune. After the performance, Paganini sent Berlioz a message that read, quote, "Beethoven is dead, and Berlioz alone can revive him." And along with this message came a gift of 20,000 francs. And because of this generous sum of money, Berlioz could now step back from the production of commercial hack work that he had been producing to stay alive. It was at this time that Hector Berlioz produced some very serious and ambitious works, such as the Requiem and his first real opera called Benvenuto Cellini, which was a disaster when performed at the Paris Opera House. He also completed his symphony Romeo and Juliet that he states was influenced by his experiences with Harriet Smithson. In the year 1842, Hector Berlioz went to Belgium and to Germany to conduct some of his works. This tour also took him to Austria, England, and Russia. During these concerts, he made a serious impression on many who attended the concerts, as he did back in Paris. In the year 1846, Hector Berlioz completed a work that he had started some 17 years earlier, called The Damnation of Faust. This work was performed at the Opera Comique in Paris on December the 6th, 1846. Unfortunately, the attendance was poor, and the work was booed and hissed. And with this defeat, Hector Berlioz went into a tailspin. Thank you. As far as his financial situation, he was now 10,000 francs in debt. But this would not stop his output of work. From the year 1856 to 1858, Berlioz worked on his most ambitious work, which is an operatic epic called The Trojans. This work takes 6 hours to perform, and although it was ambitious, it lacked the energy and spirit that Richard Wagner brought to such massive works of his own. The final years of Hector Berlioz's life were very unhappy. His marriage to his second wife, Marie, who would die soon in the year 1862, was as bad as his first marriage, and his deteriorating health began to take a turn for the worst, as he suffered from intestinal neuralgia. But Berlioz kept his spirits up the best that he could by writing a few happy-go-lucky pieces, such as the opera score Beatrice and Benedict, based on Shakespeare's Much Ado About Nothing. He conducted the work on August the 9th, 1862, and it received rave reviews. This farce-like piece would turn out to be Hector Berlioz's last work. After the death of his second wife, Berlioz found temporary comfort by the love of a mysterious young woman who was only 26 years old, who he knew nothing about except for her name, Amélie. It seems that the girl took pity on the 61-year-old composer, and she allowed Berlioz to vent his frustrations and despairs to her with an open ear. Sadly, later that year, Berlioz found out that Amélie had died at the same age of 26. By now, most of Hector Berlioz's long-life friends and family had died, including his two sisters, Nancy and Adelaide. But next, the final blow came when in the year 1867, Hector Berlioz found out that his only son, Louis, a merchant shipping captain, had died of yellow fever in Havana, Cuba. After this tragedy, that was about all of the misery that Hector Berlioz could take. After this, in kind of a ritual, he burned most of the documents and mementos that he had collected in his life, except for a guitar given to him by Niccolo Paganini and a baton handed to him by the great Felix Mendelssohn. Hector Berlioz lived out the rest of his life in seclusion in his apartment in Paris, physically and spiritually exhausted. At some points, the pain from his intestinal agony brought on by endless spasms literally paralyzed the poor Berlioz. As I stated in the beginning of this portrait, at the end of his life, Hector Berlioz did rekindle his relationship with his first love, Estelle Fournier, but she made it crystal clear to him that the two would only be friends. In his will, he left her 1,600 francs so she could live out the rest of her life with some type of comfort. The great Hector Berlioz died, surrounded by his friends, on March the 8th, 1869. He was 66 years old. His last words that he spoke were, quote, "They are finally going to play my music." But some say that these words could be apocrypha or possible. The funeral march from his own grand and triumphant funeral symphony was the music that was performed at his funeral. And later, both of Hector Berlioz's wives' bodies were exhumed from their resting places and buried next to him at Montmartre Cemetery in Paris, France.